Woody Woop, what up, what up? This is Too Cold Scorpio, and you're listening to me. I'm the GRP with Igor Wick and Frank D. Check it out, y'all.
Welcome back to the Gruick Report podcast. I am Steve Gruick. It is Monday, May the 18th, 2015, and today I welcome a very special guest to the GRP, a guy I've been a big fan of for a long time, the innovator of the 450. He is a former ECW World Tag Team Champion, a World Heavyweight Television Champion, held the WCW World Tag Team Championships, all kinds of great runs in Japan with the championships there. And today he's our very special guest, who's formerly known as Flash Funk in WWF, and you'll probably remember him as Too Cold Scorpio. How are you doing today, sir?
Woody Woo! What up, what up? Just trying to holler at all the great fans out there in the GRP. What's up, what's up?
What is up? What is going on these days with Too Cold Scorpio? Obviously, you work independently now and you work your own schedule. What's been going on with you in recent years? What have you been up to?
Well, the bottom line is, I had to take a little break off and stuff, didn't want to get burned out on the wrestling. The thing about it is, you go out too much, people get to see you all around the world and shit, and when you come out and shit, it ain't nothing new to them anymore. Sometimes what is old is still new, especially if you still got it like Too Cold.
All right, that's cool. The luxury of picking your own schedule.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've been in the business for, about 30 years now. You've taken a lot of bumps, a lot of bruises. How are you doing physically these days?
Physically, I'm still holding up. The body's still good. I'm still able to get out there and give 110%. It just takes a little bit longer for the body to heal. It ain't like it was before where I can go out there and knock heads and party all night long and be ready to go the next night, get a little bit older. So them days is long gone. Now it's about getting back to the hotel, putting ice on the body, and getting ready for the next night.
What is the key? I mean, we just said 30 years in this business. That's insane. This is a crazy business. People come and go all the time. What is the key to your longevity? How did you stay in this business for so long?
The key to longevity basically is taking care of your body, taking care of your knees, trying to get away with less injuries as possible, even though it's hard to avoid. It's a matter of not rushing, if you do get hurt, not rushing to get back in the ring as much as you may love it, as much as you may want to be in the ring. You don't want to rush it if you got an injury.
And, of course, people listening to this interview, it's in the Midwest. You can definitely check out Too Cold Scorpio this weekend, Friday and Saturday. He's going to be in Cleveland, Ohio, for Absolute Intense Wrestling. Well, they present the JT Lightning Invitational Tournament. I know a lot of fans are looking forward to this. There's going to be Little Guido. There's going to be Colin Delaney. There's going to be BJ Whitmer from Ring of Honor. So a lot of great talent. I know this is something you're looking forward to this weekend.
I'm definitely looking forward to this weekend and stuff. Think about going up to the AIW is that they have a lot of great up-and-coming talent as well as a lot of known wrestlers that's coming in. But anybody that's interested in some great matches and good shows and looking to be excited and turned on, and you need to be at the show, bottom line.
Yeah, definitely. They're also doing a girls' night out, 15, their 15th show here, and they got a lot of glamorous girls that'll be a part of the show that's wrestling. Veda Scott, Athena, Heidi Lovelace. So definitely check out the action this weekend in Cleveland. You can also check out my main man, Too Cold Scorpio, at the Our Lady of Mount Carmel School in Cleveland, Ohio. So definitely check out those good shows, all women shows, and then the JT Lightning Invitational Tournament. Sometimes we got to give it up for the ladies, too, that they can entertain in the ring as well.
No doubt. They work just as hard as the men. They go out there. They give 110%. The bottom line is they're a hell of an athlete just like the men wrestlers are.
Absolutely.
Can you give me the origins, the history, the name behind Too Cold Scorpio? And I assume to this day, you still own that name.
Yeah, you know, that was something, you know, a long time ago, you know, thank God when I was married to my first wife and stuff, that said something about, you know, hey, you need to patent your name and stuff. You know, that was the name that I came up with. That was something that I invented. I really got to give my credit to one of my cousins because I took him to one of my wrestling shows when I first broke into business out in Denver, Colorado, working for the Mile High Wrestling Club. And I just happened to do a little local show at one of the local bars. And my cousin was out there watching me wrestling, and he seen me cut the 450. First time anybody seen me do it and stuff. And he was like, man, that is too cold. And ever since then, Too Cold stuck with Scorpio. And ever since then, I've been riding it.
Well, you mentioned the 450. Obviously, you're the innovator. You're the man behind it. Everybody emulates it today. The Young Bucks, obviously, tearing it up with independent scene using that move. How did you develop it, and what's your thoughts when you see other wrestlers today, you know, using that move?
Well, you know, the bottom line is you know, my friends, you know, back in the day, my best friends, you know, Bill and, you know, Grimason and Kathy, you know, they was Cincinnati. They was good friends of mine, some biker people of mine. We ended up building the ring ourselves in the backyard and stuff. So we ended up building our own wrestling ring, welded it, put it together. And after that and stuff, man, we was out there working out in the ring. And my interest was, used to be, I'll come out dancing, climb up to the top rope. I would cut a front flip, land on my feet, start dancing. That used to be my entrance. So we had a dummy out there one time, and I got up to the top, and I went to go, you know, work on my entrance move, and I over-rotated, and I landed on my stomach and did the 450, and I jumped up and checked myself. I thought, oh, okay, everything's okay, don't have nothing broken, and broke up the dummy, and next thing you know, man, I started perfecting it, and here it is today. Hey, the Cold Scorpio, innovator of the 450.
You're the man behind that move, and I just, your thoughts on, a lot of people emulate it. They use it as their repertoire in the ring. I mentioned like the Young Bucks. What do you think when people use it? Is it kind of a flattering thing to see somebody use your move out there?
You know, it's kind of nice, you know, to see the young kids out there that think that that move is one of the top moves, one of the great moves that they can go ahead and add it to their repertoire. To me, you know, that says a lot about, hey, Scorpio invented this move. Not only a lot of young bucks, but a lot of old heads, you know, wish they can do it. A lot of them can do it. You know, but you also got to remember, I was 250, 260 at the time doing that move. Most guys at right. that size don't pull off a 450.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think of you like Flash Funk, like a cruiserweight, a smaller guy. But, I mean, you worked as a heavyweight. I mean, you did it all.
Yeah, you know, I was that middle guy, you know, the guy that can work with the juniors. I can work with the lights, or I can work with the heavy. You know, it all depends on what name was on the card, on the type of level you would bring me up to work. If I had to work with one of the heavier weight guys, Billy Gunn, Triple H, somebody like that, I was bringing my A game.
You pretty much work your own schedule. You take your own bookings. You're still active. You're what, almost 50 years old, still turning up in the ring. And at some point, there's going to be a final match. You know, you're finally going to end your in-ring career. Is there like kind of a dream opponent, one dream match? I mean, you know, retirement in wrestling is so odd. It's people retire, they come back, they retire, they come. It's like sometimes you have no true ending to your career. Is there like, say, if I could have just one more match, you know, to go out on a high note, is there like a dream opponent you could have for a dream retirement match?
You know, I've always been, you know, very fortunate to have great matches with 95% of most of the people that I've been in the ring with. To me, just to be able to go out and have a great match with any one of the great stars that's still out there that would be willing to go out there, lace up the boots tight, give 110%, and try to end it on a high note. I would love that. In particular, as far as trying to pick a name of anybody out there that I would in particularly would want to do my last retirement match with, right now at the time, I'm not thinking about it because I ain't trying to retire just yet.
I mean, you want to go until you go, but I mean, do you say like in your mind, you know, maybe this will be my final year, maybe a couple more years, I'm going to wind it down. When you get to this point in your career, retirement's got to be something you're at least thinking of for the future.
You know, as far as, you know, this business, you know, this is the only business that they want you to be professional. It's the only business that you work 365 days a year with no off time. You know, it's not like being in the NFL or anything else. You're always on the clock. You're always doing something if you're on a contract with one of the major companies. If you're not, you're still working 100-plus hour days a year. My thing is right now it's at that time where, you know, I've done just about all that I could do in the wrestling world other than perhaps, you know, take my chip off my shoulder, stick it in my pocket, go back to WWE and try to make a last good run for a Legends deal or something like that, hoping that I'm going to get elected into the Hall of Fame. As far as retiring, it's about, hey, what can I do to pass on the legacy that somebody passed on to me when I broke into the business? You know, there's a lot of young, great talent out there that I would love to perhaps, you know, open up a school, a wrestling school, and be able to pass on some of my knowledge that I've learned around the world in the wrestling business to some of these up-and-coming young talent that is going to be the future superstars of the business, you know?
Are you currently under a Legends contract with WWE?
No, I am not. I am not on contract with anybody as of right now. I'm trying to do a lot of things on my own. It's been a while. Nobody really knows, you know, the story of Too Cold Scorpio getting into the business, my lifestyle, my perspective on how I seen it and how I looked at the business. And yet, I think, you know, a lot of people heard about some of the stories, the places I've been, some of the things that I've seen that I've been around. Far as things like that, but really to hear it from me, gonna have to read the book that's hopefully soon will be out before long.
Is that gonna be an ECW press book, or do you have a contract already for the publisher?
You know, as far as the publisher or anything like that, as of right now, if I'm gonna do one of the ECW or not, that I do not know. But the bottom line is, it doesn't matter if you do it under your own publisher or if you try to do it under the ECW. Vince has still got his hands in it someplace.
That's true.
And the way I look at it right now is your hands are so far in my damn pockets, you know, I would just like to get some kickback, you know, just some kickback on all of the DVDs and presents that you show monthly, month after month, you know, for years and years on end, and I'm yet to see any kind of repercussion from all the DVDs and the sales that they've done, you know, off of me.
Yeah, are you featured in the video games or action figures or anything like that?
I have one action figure that was put out by WWF as Funk. I'm pretty sure I've been on the ECW and a few of the other video games. Most of the video games that I'm on, wrestling video games, are in Japan more so.
And then we're talking about the name Too Cold Scorpio, and you went to the WWF at the time. And, of course, they wanted to change you to Flash Funk. Whose idea was that? Was that a Vince Russo brainchild? And what did you think when they said, hey, Scorpio, we want to give you this new gimmick. You're going to wear a zoot suit. You're going to have the funk hats, and you're going to dance. What was your thoughts on that?
You know, my thoughts on that was, you can buy Too Cold Scorpio. Too Cold Scorpio is me. I own that. You cannot have that. You cannot buy that. You cannot buy my real name. I'm sorry. You know, one-sided contracts, you know. You know, if I know what I know now, shit, he wouldn't have got away with the bullshit when he did. For me, it was a chunk. It was all Vince's idea. I believe Vince was a fan of Rick James, kind of like this movie. You know, Rick James was a freak, you know, in the music world, kind of like Vince is, you know, in the wrestling business, you know, a freak of nature. You never know where he's coming from, what's he going to do, but he can get down with the best of them, I'll tell you. And the bottom line was
a genetic freak, anyways, right?
Exactly. You know, but you know, the bottom line is it was his idea and his gimmick. You know, he wanted to know, can you sing? You know, because you know, if you can sing, you can go out there and play the guitar. You can sing. I can really get the Rick James gimmick. Moreover, the bottom line is I don't sing, but I can dance my ass off with the best of them. And basically, that's what it was. We sat there, we talked behind the desk, he kind of looked down, he looked at the gimmick, and the bottom line is, he goes, hey, I'll give you 2 months to get the gimmick over. To me, it was a challenge. This is a new gimmick. I can take this gimmick, I can get it over in 4 months, less than a year. And Vince was like, show me. So to me, it was more of a challenge that it don't matter what kind of gimmick that you try to give Too Cold Scorpio, I'm still going to rock it, no matter what it is, even Flash Funk.
And then, of course, in recent years, they've kind of rejuvenated that character with Brodus Clay, right? He came out, and he's basically doing your gimmick.
You know, doing, you know, my thing is when you start talking about a funkadoid, you start talking about a dinosaur. So what you trying to say? You know what I'm saying? And, hey, it doesn't matter. You know, like Vince say, you know, Flash, Funk, it can be Hulk Hogan. It don't matter who it is. Too Cold Scorpio, you can come in and be Flash Funk today, but tomorrow I'll have somebody else perpetrating the same gimmick, doing the same thing you're doing. May not look as good, maybe a little out of shape, but it's still trying to get the gimmick over. Why? Because it's all in the pen and hand of the writer. You know, I can write you over like I want you. Don't mean that you're getting over, but I can write it in as it is.
Do you feel your talent was appreciated at all in WWF?
Unappreciated. Very right. much so. You know, the only place that I really could say that my talent really shined, that I really got over, I would have to give my thanks to Todd Gordon and to Paul Lee. You know, as many lies as Paul Lee may have told you about the money you was going to get or the money you was going to make, he ain't never lied about his ideas, and he know how to make money.
Yeah, creative genius, financially not the best business manager.
Not at all. But if you want a hell of an angle, you want a hell of a story, hey, they would handle it. That's why I had to deal with Todd Gordon. Thank God my best friend and shit, he took care of me and made sure that I got paid, you know. So even when the checks would bounce, you know, I was one of the few that would get mine every now and then. Might be a week later or two, but at least I would get it.
What do you kind of think overall the phenomenon of ECW? Of course, it had its great run in the East and then expanded nationally, got on a national contract. You know, Vince brought it back in his – you know, watered down version, you know, years later. But I mean, today ECW still has a cult following. People still love ECW. They'll chant ECW out there. And you know, reflecting on, you know, your career ECW and now the nostalgia of ECW, are you kind of surprised today that people still love ECW as much maybe as they did back in the day?
I am so surprised, you know, that they still do chant like they do as far as the ECW chant goes. You know, when you get out there, it's an amazing feeling, especially if you ever had the chance for the opportunity to work for ECW. You know, that was true fans that had no problem about telling you when you messed up or when you fucked up, they had no problem about telling you, okay? You did good, if you did good and you impressed them, they had no problem about clapping and showing you that they appreciate it. And the ECW chant was the way to do it. I think a lot of it has to do with Paul Lee filming, taping everything, and a lot of the younger group and people who've never heard of it going out there watching them videos, seeing how crazy and how wild and how realistic some of that wrestling was and stuff, that, you know, it's kind of gotten them into it. Because now with PG wrestling going on, them days is long gone.
Long gone. Wow.
Our kids nowadays playing Grand Theft Auto, you know what I'm saying? Call of Duty, you know what I'm saying? They ain't worried about no PG show. Come on now.
You know, I've often said this. I've gone back in the day, I went to WWF shows, independent shows, TNA shows, WCW shows. Nothing compares to a live ECW event. When you were at an ECW house show, that place just would go berserk. I mean, and it would be like the bingo halls. It would be the smaller venues. You're all squished together. The fans were rabid. They were chanting ECW. As you said, they had all the famous, you know, you're a crack whore chants and all these chants. Nothing, and all the experiences I've had in wrestling, nothing ever compared to a live ECW event.
You know, that's that. Day. That excitement, that electricity that runs through the crowd. You know, when you got people packed on top of people like that, hot and sweaty and no AC, man, you better give them a good show, because if not, boy, they're going to be mad as hell and ready to ride afterwards. So we had to go out there, and the best thing about it was is everybody knew what they had to do. Go out and give them 110%, nothing less.
Do you feel that way? I mean, reflecting, you worked in front of all different kinds of crowds, Japanese crowds, independent crowds, all over the world. Does anything really compare to that rabid ECW fan base back in the day?
There was nothing like the ECW fan base. You know, for me, you know, I had a great following over in Japan. I had a great tag team partner that I was with that was well known and was over. So when I was tag team with Big Van Vader, it really kind of boosted me up a level. Especially considering the level of talent of matches that I was in with some of the great Japanese wrestlers. I think that helped a lot with my crowd appeal over in Japan. But the overall biggest, I would say, that seemed like they had no problem about appreciating and showing it what happened to be the ECW. You can't take nothing away from the ECW, man. It was like one of the best places probably to work for, the locker room. It wasn't no stress. It wasn't no BS. You didn't have to worry about, you know, who's on whose team and who's stooging who off at the time, you know, so.
Do you, these days, do you have a relationship at all with Paul Heyman?
I don't have a relationship with Paul Heyman. The only one that I keep in contact with, like I say right now, as far as boss-wise, is just Todd Gordon, my best friend and stuff in the whole world and shit, you know, that been friends ever since he brought me in there the very first time and to this day now. And, you know, he normally talks to Paul Heyman or kind of knows what Paul is doing and what he's doing on WWE or whatever, and he normally just, you know, keeps me posted on how he's doing and, you know, what's going on with the family. But as far as really been in contact, I don't have any contact with Paul Heyman on a friend base or a professional level right now.
You mentioned the PG wrestling. That's, of course, what we're living in today is the PG era. You know, we don't do, you know, the TNA. We don't do the hardcore stuff. We don't show blood, et cetera. Do you keep up with it at all today? Do you understand the storylines, the characters at all?
I have no idea about the storylines anymore in the WWE. I don't even follow the WWE anymore. For me to want to follow the WWE, I would have to be under contract and be in it to want to follow it. But I'm not trying to follow no PG wrestling because to me, PG wrestling is long gone. It just doesn't work anymore. I mean, you lose fan base, you lose a lot of crowd. It's nice that you can go to a wrestling show without no cuss and without no bloods, but, you know, nowadays the world is too rough for that, man. People want to see the blood and guts. They want to see the cage matches. You know, unfortunately, Vince started that tits and ass, you know, with the TNA. You know, you started with them, you tease it with them, you give them, you want to do the Lesbo gimmick, this gimmick, that gimmick, every other gimmick in the world. Now you want to take it away and give them, you know, the three-ring circus tent. Really?
Yeah, we talked to D'Lo Brown on this podcast, and he said there's nothing PG about wrestling.
There is none. There never has been any PG about wrestling, and there never will be. I mean, there's been a few places where, hey, kids are in the crowd and stuff, so, hey, you want to, you know, tone down on the cousin, but it ain't nothing that they ain't heard in their own damn house.
Yeah, I mean, it's two guys that want to kick each other's ass.
Right.
And you got PG about that.
And you got the kids sitting right next to his mama talking about kick his ass.
You can't say that. You guys, I'm gonna kick his butt.
Right. And the kids look at that. Mom, did he just say butt? Didn't he mean ass? You know, and the kid. You know what I'm saying? The kid's 7 years old. You know, come on now.
You know, you said it before. You know, kids are playing Mortal Kombat, Grand Theft Auto, and then. You know, we have John Cena, who is, you know, as PG as they get now.
Right.
It just doesn't translate to him. I mean, when we sit on this podcast, and we keep up with wrestling. We follow it. We got Gerwig.net, the website. And, you know, I started doing this in 1997 when wrestling was at its peak. It was the Monday Night Wars. It was crazy. ECW was going everywhere. And nowadays, it's, you know, here I am. It's this product is not for me.
You know, I think it goes back to what, you know, that thing about Vince McMahon, you know, something he always wanted to do, something he's, I'll never forget back in the day when we was in WCW and, Ted Turner wanted to do a big show, WCW versus the WWF, you know what I mean? Let's blow it off. Never been done, you know, but, you know, we sat and had a meeting about it. We were all in the CNN tower talking about it and Ted just telling us the story about how he called Vince up and wanted to do it. Vince love it. Sound like a good idea. The only problem is he ain't into the wrestling. He's into the entertainment. When he said this business was entertainment, that's when he fucked it up for everybody. Because this is damn. I mean, it's entertaining as hell, but it's still wrestling as physical as can be.
Did you realize today Monday Night Raw is 3 hours long?
What?
Yeah, Monday Night Raw is 3 hours.
3 hours. Okay, so now I got 3 hours of fucking wrestling on TV, and I'm only going to see 5 matches? You better give me my hour and a half, eh? I don't need to hear 3 hours of some jaw-jacking person that's been sitting back in the hour for 6 hours reading a piece of paper trying to memorize his line.
And then you get a 6-minute match, maybe, if you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky. And that's including, your entrance and shit, you know what I mean? And the big guys in the back is going to need another minute, so your match just got cut.
Yeah, so we have 3 hours of Raw. We have a 2-hour SmackDown during the week. And then Vince wants me to pay for the WWE Network and pay-per-views and all this. I mean, all this product you're giving me, and I got to pay for more?
Right. And now, from what I understand, is they did some spill out on the net and on the web, trying to find out what indie people go to, what indie shows they go, what indie shows they like. Now they're trying to go in and take over the territories with the NXT, so some guys can try to get some experience on working the indie shows, but working like a damn TV show. I can tell you right now, you go to an indie show, they ain't trying to see no TV matches. They want to see wrestling.
Absolutely. And yeah, you know, we said it before in this podcast. If you want to see real wrestling, I mean, go to independent show, go to Ring of Honor show. And I went to a Ring of Honor show in November. It wasn't the same experience as an ECW show, but fans got into it. It was wrestling. They worked hard in the ring, and they put on a hell of a show. So if you're tired of all this PG cockamamie storylines, if you want to see wrestling, I mean, it is still out there in some form.
No doubt, no doubt. You know, the thing about it is, unfortunately, if you want to see wrestling, it's happening in the indies. You know what I mean? And the thing about it is, a lot of great up-and-coming talent is out there in the indies nowadays that it's unbelievable. These kids nowadays are the type of kids that I'm talking about that I would love to go ahead and take them and put them in school and put them out there. But the problem is these kids can work. If you can work 9 times out of 10, you're going to be cursed in the WWE because you can work. They don't need no workers up there. They need entertainers up there. If you can entertain and you can memorize a line, read a script, memorize a script, that's what we want. But if you don't want to wrestle, you better go to the indies, okay?
I mean, they send the guys from Japan. They send them to NXT to learn the WWE ring style. They signed Kevin Steen from Ring of Honor. He's now Kevin Owens.
What?
To work the WWE style. I mean, they may sign Samoa Joe. You know, he's going to have to tone his act down in the WWE. As you said, they're not looking for guys who can tear it up in the ring. They're looking for entertainers these days.
Right.
Which is a big difference from way back in the day when they actually let you guys wrestle out there.
Right, when wrestling was wrestling. I mean, even back in WWF, back in the day, if you wanted a good match, if you wanted a good show, you went to the house shows. I mean, WCW, AWA, they had some of the best storylines. I mean, storylines would go on for 6 months, 7 months, a year before it would come to an end and the people would buy it because they knew how to do a damn angle. You heard somebody, damn Nick, you see him walk around in the brace for months and months and months at a time, working the angle, working again, because that's what wrestling was if you want to work it.
Yeah, Mid-South Wrestling, World-Class Championship Wrestling. It would be a continuous storyline. They didn't give you these cockamamie storylines that go nowhere. And they'd entertain, as you said, a six-month storyline or a six-month angle, a program. They don't usually do that much anymore these days.
You had a storyline, you know what I mean? You could follow. You know what I mean? Oh, this guy, he's leaving town. He's got kicked out. He's got to leave town. What? He just went to another territory, made his name bigger, came back in town, and now look, he's the champion.
What happened with when you left WWF, I guess, what, 99, early 2000, then you went to Japan? What happened with WWF and why did you leave there?
You know, the bottom line is basically and shit is, you know, I got let go, you know, for whatever reason it was, for whatever bullshit, you know, contract, you know, up there and shit, you know, with someone signing contracts, you know, hey, if we feel at any given moment in time we want to let you go, we will, you know. I think bottom line was that we need your name to sign this paper so we can have the rights to sell this shit. Other than that, we really don't need you. We'll get you here for a year, so we'll use your stuff and send you on your way.
And then what was it, 06, 07, they brought you back to what would be now the WWE.
Right, right. And, you know, under the same government, under the same pretense, you know, and like my wife said, you know, at the time, you know, yes, it would be nice to be back in the States and shit, but, you know, why you want to mess up something nice over here in Japan that you got going on? You know, I've been working over in Japan seven years straight, you know, getting over, you know, enjoying it. Don't have to worry about dealing with, you know, the American suit and tie bullshit, you know what I mean? So, and then when they brought me back, you know, I was just basically, you know, tired of living in Germany, missing America, homesick, ready to be back home, and it was a great opportunity, a chance to come back home. You know, not realizing that, hey, we want you, we can use you, we really don't need you, but we need your signature because that's how you sell shit. is because now, you know, if I sign a contract, they have the right to do everything. And if I fire you, I don't have to pay you nothing. But I still do have the right to sell whatever I want to sell for as long as I want to sell it.
We are going to take a quick break. More with Too Cold Scorpio right after this. Are you enjoying this edition of the Gruick Report podcast?
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
Did you know that every edition of the Gruick Report podcast, the GRP, is archived at www.gerweck.net?
Really? Really?
Really?
Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
The Gruick Report podcast has interviewed some of the biggest stars in the wrestling business.
Hi, I'm Eric Bischoff.
This is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett.
Stevie Richards.
Former WWE superstar Ricardo Rodriguez.
Teddy Long.
Ron Simmons, a.k.a. Baruch.
Christopher Daniels.
This Frankie Kazarian.
The Honky Tonk Man, the greatest intercontinental heavyweight champion of all time.
Matt Hardy.
Rob Van Dam.
Paul London.
Ted DiBiase, the Billion Dollar Man. You remember me?
Terry Reynolds, and you are listening to the Gruick Report podcast with Steve Gruick and Frank D. I don't miss it, neither should you.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Hey, what's up? This is Frank D of the GRP, and I have got a deal for you today. Go to audibletrial.com/gruick.net. That's audibletrial.com/GERWECK.net and get a free audiobook today. That's right, a free audiobook just for using our exclusive URL, which is audibletrial.com/Gerwick.net. A free audiobook and a 30-day trial to the Audible service. You get to keep that audiobook even if you don't keep the service, but I'm telling you, you're going to love the service once you try it. Go to audibletrial.com/Gerwick.net today, and thank you for your continued support of the GRP and Gerwick.net.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I am the infamous Carolina D. Waters, here to tell you that for all your wrestling news, rumors, and gossip, you need to go to Gerwick.net.
Hey, what's up? This is Frank D of the Gruick Report Podcast and Gruick.net. Hey, if you like what we do here on GRP and you think we are truly the podcast that tells it like it is, why not represent the GRP? Show us a little support today by going to ProWrestlingTees.com/GERWECK. That's ProWrestlingTees.com/Gruick. 4 designs up right now, each $19.99 plus shipping and handling. But when you buy a t-shirt, you support Gruick.net and you represent the podcast that tells it like it is. So check it out today. ProWrestlingTees.com/Gruick, and thank you for your continued support of the Gruick Report Podcast and Gruick.net. Today's edition of the Gruick Report Podcast is brought to you by Gruick.net, wrestling news since 1997. Check it out today, www.gerweck.net.
You can now listen to the
Gruick Report Podcast
on the free TuneIn Radio app, featuring over 100,000 real radio stations, over 4 million podcasts streaming live from every continent, offering unprecedented access to listen to anything, anywhere. TuneIn lets you listen to over 100,000 real radio stations and more than 4 million podcasts from every continent, 200,000 mobile downloads per day. Available on iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, Windows 8, BlackBerry, Amazon Kindle. Available in over 200 branded products with millions of devices sold worldwide, including Samsung Smart TV, Roku, Sonos, Sony PlayStation, Amazon Echo, Panasonic Vieira TV, Logitech Squeezebox. TuneIn brings streaming radio to cars, including GM, Ford, BMW, Tesla, Mercedes-Benz, Volvo, Nissan, Fiat, and more.
We are back with Too Cold Scorpio here on the GRP, the Gruick Report podcast. You know, the unfortunate thing, and of course you had a great run with Pro Wrestling NOAA in the early 2000s, but from, you know, an American perspective, a lot of fans didn't get a chance to see that, your work there. They didn't see the matches unless they were, you know, trading tapes or DVDs back in the day. Can you talk about your experience with Pro Wrestling NOAA and maybe tagging with the great Vader?
For me, you know, working over in Japan was a great opportunity. I had made the move from to NOAA when they had first opened up the company and they first made the split from All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Baba's passing.
Exactly. I was doing an independent show. I was over in Australia. Actually, I had just got home on a 26-hour flight from Australia. and back into Florida, and Vader had gave me a call that night about 1 o'clock in the morning and said that he was in Hawaii talking to Mizawa about the new company and would like to bring me in. Can you jump on a flight in the morning, you know, first flight out and be in Hawaii? And I was like, yeah, but money situation. He's like, don't worry about it. Book a first class ticket, call the wife, book it. I'll see you when you get here. Shit, I packed my bags, jumped on a flight, went to Hawaii, sat down with Mizawa now. Ken and Mr. Russo at the time talked about the situation, contract, and went from there. And ever since then, I've been riding on Raiders coattail.
A promoter that'll actually pay you.
Exactly. So
I'm going to pay you this much, and I'm going to deliver on it.
Right. So for me, you know, to get that opportunity to go over there, it was just, you know, company started out, you know, I was over there just about every month, you know, when a company first opened up for about the first 2 years. Just about on every tour on, you know, getting the company off the ground, me and Big Van Vader and Richard Slinger, you know, we was all, you know, over there doing our thing and stuff. And, man, and then from there, things just blew up, you know. Four guys didn't start coming. We became the top guys, you know, over there. Became, you know, some of the top guys on the bus, you know. Opportunity came around, of course, you know. In this wrestling world, you know, if anybody's looking at you and you're trying to talk to another company or another company's talking to you, like WWF, you know, or at that time WCW, the whole world's going to know that you're being in talk with them, you know. So, and me not, you know, not going to the office and letting them know that I was already in contact with the WWE at that time, planning on coming back and was in talk with them, you know, I think that, you know, wasn't a very good idea of a choice I had made. And the wife was just saying the same thing, you know, they only need you for your signature. They really don't need you. You shouldn't go back. But, you know, went back and got screwed. And, you know, here we are today and shit, still doing indie where I started at. You know, the best place to end it at.
Now, you've wrestled pretty much everywhere. You know, Korea, I was thinking back to the Worlds Collide show in the early 90s. You, of course, were in Japan. Talk about Australia trip. Is there any place you really didn't wrestle that you wanted to work somewhere?
You know, the only place that I didn't really get a chance or opportunity to work is I never really worked over in Seoul. I never really worked over in Korea too much. I didn't really get a chance to ever work in, like, the Philippines. You know, the WWF back in the day, we used to take trips to the Philippines. They had the A team and the B team, you know. So I was usually on the B squad. Every now and then on the A squad, you know, the A squad did Bahrain, India, Kuwait, you know, a few of those places I never went to that I thought would have been quite interesting to wrestle, you know, where I did have an opportunity to go to Africa, you know, Australia and a few other places, you know, to work. So, you know, it kind of evened out, but there's about a handful of places that I still would love to wrestle in the world that I haven't yet.
Yeah. I mean, this is one job encourages travel, and you get a chance to see a lot of exciting places and meet a lot of different people along the way. And I'm sure this will be things you'll be talking about in your book as well.
You know, definitely, you know, and that was the good thing about, you know, being in this business and stuff was it was an opportunity to travel around and see the world if somebody else was paying for it. But not only that, though, but you was getting paid to go out and fight. Go out and give 110%. You didn't have to worry about fighting on the street. You didn't have to worry about going out and fighting in the club. Your wife pissed you off? Don't worry about it. You go out, you take it out on your partner in the ring, you tell them you're sorry, you get paid for it, everything's all good. You know?
You know, you won a lot of different championships. Is there a favorite title or championship, or in general, is there a favorite period, you know, reflecting on your career?
I would have to say that, man, it was in ECW, and I would say it happened to be in Noah Pro Wrestling when I was the hardcore champion. And the tag team champion, too, with Big Van Vader, and held the hardcore champion over in Japan. To me, that was like a big time in my career to have two belts. And also, to be in ECW, you had a tag team title and a TV title and be called Three Gold Scorpio, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, Two Gold Scorpio. You know, that was the shit, you know. So that was the shit back in the day, you know. Yeah, so those was the good old days, man. Back in the day, having the titles, making a run. So I was the ECW and NOAH probably was the best for me, man, as far as having the championships and running with them and stuff, you know. Told a few of them over in, like, Germany, a place at the front was smaller company, smaller league, but they don't add up to the same stuff as, you know, getting one for one of the major companies.
I was going to say, what was your favorite promotion you worked for, and then who was your favorite booker?
Oh, my favorite booker? I would have to say Todd Gordon, ECW. You know, him and Paulie worked together, but as far as me coming in, you know, it was always taken care of by Todd Gordon. Also, I would have to say, you know, working in NOAH, you know, with Mizawa, you know, Rusan and them, you know, being the booker. Wasn't real crazy about Rusan at the time, but nevertheless, I was going every month. I was still getting booked, so I couldn't complain about that, you know. So he was another one of the great bookers and stuff. WCW, you know, believe it or not, you know, me coming into WCW, even though I got screwed on my contract, you know, knowing what I know now, the talent that I had and shit, they would have been paying me a lot more. But I enjoyed working down there, you know, under old prejudice-ass Bill Watts.
Bill Watts, that's an interesting name.
He knew how to make money.
That's what it is. I mean, he's always...
I'm lying, and he was straight, and he'll be honest with you. You know, I'm prejudiced. You know, he had no problem about trying to call you out of your name, calling you the N-word in a minute if you was black. You know what I mean? Had no problem. You know what I'm saying? But he knew how to make money.
He made a lot of money with JYD, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, for a guy being prejudiced, he made a lot of money with the Junkyard Dog back in the
day. Yes, he did.
Yeah. How rampant is racism in wrestling these days? I should probably say more so in your day when you wrestled. Was it very commonplace, or was it kind of hit and miss?
In my day, in my time, my era coming up, you know, it still was, you know. You got to figure when I broke in, you know, it was a good old boy's business, and it still is, and it probably always will be, you know. A handful of blacks, not really too much more than that, you know. Yeah. So to me, I think it was probably a little bit more, you know, back then. It was about, you know, can I make money? Can you put asses in the seat? You know, it didn't matter. You know, you may not have been top paid like you should have been paid for your time being a man of color, but they used you right and you got paid.
Yeah, I mean, we all these years we wanted a black champion, and we had, you know, Ron Simmons, and then later it was Booker T. I mean, those guys were successful. It just, you look at the history of wrestling, it's like they've missed so many opportunities to market an African American star. I mean, NFL, NBA, they're African American stars. Where is it in wrestling?
Right, right. You know, and the thing about it is Vince has always done, seem like every gimmick he had, just enough of every gimmick, whether it's a hillbilly gimmick or, you know, it didn't matter from way back when, you know, if you look at wrestling way back when his dad used to run it, the Moondogs was there and, you know, people like that, you know, Kamala, you know, you still have your handful of black, but it's that character of the black man that they want you to portray or they want you to play when it really ain't the way that you are.
Well, I will say this. Had it not been for Hulk Hogan in the 80s, Junkyard Dog would have been the world champion.
Yeah.
He was that old. You know,
yeah.
He was always second fiddle, number two babyface to Hulk Hogan back in the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
But he could have easily been a world champion in that company. Grab them cakes.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, but I remember just sitting back talking with, you know, the Junkyard Dog and Ron Simmons and Tez Watley, you know, a handful of the blacks they had down in WCW at the time, and, you know, trying to let me know and break me into the business the right way. So, you know, I had a real opportunity to ride up and down the road with people like Hardy Race and Big Van Vader and, you know, Haku and Mean, you know, which at that time, those guys was all on top. You know, when I broke in, so I had a real opportunity to get old school training from the best.
Now, when I asked you about bookers, one name I noticed you didn't mention, kind of a heat magnet, Vince Russo. What's your opinion of Vince Russo overall?
Vince Russo, lucky bastard. Don't really have a clue, but learned a lot more over the years of being around it. You know, happened to be in a position, in a situation where, you know, Diamond Dallas Page had string and got him in and stuff, but overall wise, he wasn't the best for the wrestling business.
No, of course, he takes a lot of credit for the, you know, the Attitude Era and Raw catching up to WCW. Is he right in that he had a lot of creative ideas at that period, or is he just kind of stroking his own ego at that point?
I think he might have been stroking his own ego a little bit more than what really happened and shit, you know, because for that, you know, that attitude and for that era to go off, it had a lot to do with what WCW and ECW was doing at that time, that they had no choice but to change to an attitude in the WWF if they wanted to keep up with the ratings. You know, back then it was all about the ratings and shit.
That's for sure. What was your, obviously you worked with Chris Benoit in WCW. What was your reaction when you heard about the Chris Benoit tragedy?
I was completely floored, shocked. Would never would have thought that something like that would have happened to my manager that we had for years, an ECW woman, and for one of my best overall working partners in the business that ever had a chance to work with, somebody that took time out of his own personal life and his schedule to stay in Japan an extra 2 weeks on my first trip to Japan to go live in the dojo to stay and try to get me in shape and to help me out to really buzz me on what I had in store for me, what I really had in store for me and training with the New Japan Pro Wrestling at the time. Couldn't believe it, you know, and disbelieved that, you know, somebody that I've known half my life in the wrestling business would flip out and would do something like that. But in this business, you put nothing past nobody, and on the stress and the bullshit that you have to go through working, but there's other alternatives to a relationship than taking yourself out.
You know, I think, you know, the Benoit situation opened up awareness to concussions. Obviously, they studied his brain, and it was he had the brain equivalency of a very old man, and it really raised awareness of concussions. Any idea how many concussions you might have suffered in your career?
Between football, wrestling, I've been real fortunate. I've been real blessed to probably only suffer a handful that I know that's been recorded, probably about a handful that, oh, it'll go away.
Take a couple aspirin, it'll be okay.
Right.
Right.
Take two, call me in the morning, you know what I'm saying? Just don't go to sleep right away when you get home if your head's still hurting, that's all.
That's right. Mike Awesome, ECW champion. I thought he was kind of on the edge of being a huge star. He went to WCW, and unfortunately he was out of the business. He went to WWF, and he never really got his fair shake. Just an overall opinion of Mike Awesome.
Great, great dude to know, man. I had a great opportunity to get to know him, travel with him, work with him over in Japan. A big, multi-talented guy, a guy that big, that size, you know, would always kind of remind me of myself. You know, big guy like that, but yet he flies like a little man. Light on his feet, but big as a house.
Yeah, another tragedy, you know. He ended up taking his own life, and because of an interview with you, I thought of Mike, and I just thought, man, what a guy that was just on the cusp, I think, being a huge star and ECW champion. He went to WCW, and I think made a lot of money with that jumping ship there when he was still the ECW champion. Just a guy that seemed like he was in the pinnacle of his career and just never really got off the ground.
The problem, I think, the problem with Mike is kind of like, you know, me, kind of like Rob, is that more or less like a rebel. Don't want to sit there and have somebody tell you what you can do, how you can do it, how much you can do, and how much you can't do. You know, you want me to come in big, you want to have a great match, well, I need to come in high as fuck then, okay? And Vince ain't trying to hear that. You know, I think just the overall stress of the bills piling on and overdoing, you know, unfortunately, you know, wrestlers, you know, we have a tendency, not all of us, but a lot of us have a tendency to do shit to the extreme because we figure we're so much more bigger. We're so much more stronger. It takes this much more than what the average person takes to take care of the pain or to get rid of the pain. And now I've been doing this for so long, now I'm addicted to it. So I think that has a lot to do with some of the other players on some of their roles and their decisions that when it came down to taking my own life, taking up, you know, or something like that, because there is more options to it than just taking the life. There's more to it than just wrestling. When wrestling's gone, you got to have something else to fall back on. You know, me letting everybody out there know, young kid, young buck, I'm telling you now, when this shit gets ready to come to an end, this business is like a poison. You get a little bit of wrestling in you, you want to have more. You want to have more and more and more, just like a drug. And when you don't got it, you'd be amazing what you'll do to try to get it.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, Vince, it's like a circus act. They use you up, and then when they're done, I mean, figuratively, they take you out back and shoot you.
You know what, right? Vince is? Vince is nothing but a pimp. I've always said that. Ron Simmons told me that. I never realized it until like 4 or 5 years ago. Vince is major time pimp, a legal pimp. We get motherfucking wrestlers. We use you. We pimp you out. We pay you to go out there and do what we want you to do. And when we get tired of your ass, I will fire you in a heartbeat, and I will hire myself a new hoe to go out and do the same thing that you guys have just been doing. But I'm going to get somebody a little bit younger who don't know the business and pay him a little bit less to do the same shit that you're doing, because he's been watching your videos and he can do every move you can do.
Well, how the hell does Vince McMahon get away with independent contractor status? He has no employees. He says, oh, I'm going to pay you X amount of dollars, but you can't work anywhere else. You can't do this show. You can't make an autograph signing. You can't do this. And you're basically a slave to me. How does he get away with that stuff?
Modern day slavery with a pimp idea behind it. He's masterminded, he figured it out, and he's got over. If I can get a handful of guys to stick the motherfucking together with them damn one-sided contracts, we all can get paid. The problem is, like it's always been, you can't get the boys to stick together on nothing. That's why we don't have nothing to fall back on. There is no retirement after wrestling. If you don't save retirement, put retirement away while you're working, there ain't nothing to fall back on.
No unions in wrestling, right?
Ain't no union in wrestling. That shit ain't happening. As many times they try to make it happen, it just ain't happening.
What's your thoughts? Obviously, we're talking about Vince being the pimp daddy there. He's kind of stringing himself down a little bit and allowing Triple H and Stephanie to get more involved in the decision-making process. What do you think the future holds for WWF or WWE, I should say? Yes, WWE. What do you think the future holds for the company with Stephanie and Triple H running the show?
Well, my thing is, you know, just like Vince McMahon, you know, he wanted to get into this damn business after he was in the bodybuilding business, and he wanted to get into announcing, and he wanted to get into wrestling. His daddy made him do everything from point A to point B about the business. Tear down the ring, set the ring up, put it together. The same shit that he did to his kids, Stephanie and Shane. He made, you want to be in the business, this is what you need to learn. I mean, from ground zero all the way up. Learn how to put the ring together. Learn how to take shit down. You know what I mean? Learn how to take the bumps. Learn how to wrestle. You know what I mean? And I think that if he was to cut the rings and they got away from the PG, that Stephanie and Hunter, they can do, you know, keep the business running. But the bottom line is that sometimes what is old is new, but you got to have something that is new that ain't been done yet either. And in the wrestling world, there ain't nothing that ain't been done.
That's true.
You know, there's about a handful of things that ain't been done, and Vince wish he can go ahead and do them too and shit. And all that ain't been done is pull a gun and shoot a motherfucker for real. And if Vince could do that shit, it would have been done too.
That's pretty well said.
So I have a Triple H, and, you know, seven of them can work that in there. You know, they might have something, you know what I mean? But they're going to have to get away from that PG shit if they want to, you know, stay in the rankings and, you know, keep the ratings up.
Did you have much interaction with Shane McMahon? It seems odd that, you know, Shane should have been kind of the heir apparent to Vince's throne, and now it's going to go to Stephanie and her husband, Triple H.
You know, I think that all had to do with a falling out with the family. Shane is a motherfucker. He like the boys. He really like one of the boys. And I think he ain't got no problem by telling his daddy to go kiss his ass and shit. And Vince ain't trying to hear that shit. Not if you want to take care of my business. And I think Shane is like, hey, I don't need the business that goddamn bad and shit, because after being in the business for a while, you can see how much of a headache and how much of a drama it can bring up on you. Triple H done aged in, what, 4 or 5 years or shit that he's been married to her and been in the company. He done aged. It's hard on you.
Absolutely.
You age quick, you age fast. You know what I mean? You're trying to wrestle still and shit like that too and shit, and every time you do, you end up getting hurt. Why? Too much steroids.
I tell you, there was a storyline with Steve Austin and Vince McMahon, and there was a promo that Steve Austin says, you know, why would I want to run the WWF? That's got to be the biggest headache in the world.
Oh, Steve Austin, that's a good boy right there. That's a good old redneck right there, boy. That's a real redneck country boy. But he a good man, but he a good boy there, I tell you, man. I got much respect for him and shit, man. I'll never forget in WCW. He was working the circuit with Ravishing Rick Rude, and he was a champion at the time. All around and shit, man, doing time limit matches and the whole nine yards. And I remember Grizzly Adams and WCW. He was the agent that night and stuff. And me and Stone Cold had to work and stuff, man. And he turned around and he had to put me over and shit, man. And they wanted to do it in like 5, 6, 7 minutes. And he goes, man, that's some goddamn bullshit. He goes, I want you to come with me. He goes, unlike your tag team partner Bagwell or anybody else in this fucking business that go behind your goddamn back and talk shit and try to change shit up without you being there. He goes, I want you to come and hear this shit. He took me back there to Grizzly's office with him. He went back there and talked to Pops. And he told Pops, look, he goes, I ain't got no problem about putting Scorpio over. He goes, I'll be damned if I'm going to go out there and put him over in 7 minutes. And I've been working 20-minute and 30-minute Broadway with Ravishing Rick Rude with the TV champion, you know, because they was, you know, the mystery man just coming in, you know, trying to give me a push and shit, you know. But like Steve said, you know, I ain't got no problem about putting you over, but I'm not going to put you over in those 7 minutes. And I probably went out there, man, and probably had one of my, you know, better matches I had with Steve, you know, in WCW, thanks to him and shit, you know. But ever since then, man, I mean, I take my hat off to Steve. He had my respect from day one after he did that, you know.
Yeah, he should have you on his podcast. You guys could go down memory lane. That'd be awesome.
Oh, man. Yeah, we would. Yeah, we would. That motherfucker, man, he was opening up a can of whoop ass on Marcus Bagwell, me, and anybody else in WCW at that time before he ever became Stone Cold. When he became Stone Cold, that can just got bigger.
Hey, does anybody like Bagwell?
No, Bagwell's not a bad person. He just got caught up as, you know, in some bullshit at the bad time on being a kiss ass. That's all. You know, he got to where he was at by being somebody's bag boy. You know what I mean? If you're in Japan and you're a young buck and you want to break into business, you're going to be somebody's bag boy. You're going to be his young boy. And, you know, hey, you know, that's what Bagwell did. You know, he carried around Sting's bag. He carried around Lex Luger's bag until, you know, worked out at the same gym until they was able to break him in and get him into the business, you know. Unfortunately, and shit, he swung on both sides of the fence. You know, hey.
And of course, today he's a gigolo or an escort. So.
Yeah, right. And that shit pisses the hell out of me. And that shit pisses me off. How the hell he gonna be a gigolo with that little dick? You know what I'm saying? But anyways, it is what it is.
And that's a shoot.
I remember I was telling Bagwell when we was tag team back in the day, Teddy Long was our manager. So I used to tell Bagwell when we was in Atlanta, Georgia, I said, man, we need to go down to the hood, down into the little Five Points. We need to get us some of this, you know, soul food. Because the black girls is crazy about your ass and shit. I said, you want that little handsome stranger dance out there, you know what I mean? I said, we'll get over it, man. I said, I'll give him a fly. Yeah, you know what I mean? But he was scared. He didn't want to go down to the hood and get no neck bones and no greens and nothing like that because that wasn't in his diet. You know, he wanted some chicken breasts, you know, shit.
No black eyed peas?
Nah, he wanted no black eyed peas and shit, man. No. He wanted some chicken breasts, some dried chicken breasts.
Protein.
Yeah.
You know, we interviewed Teddy Long and I said, you know, you manage some of the greats in this business. Is there anybody you really didn't like to work with? And he said, Marcus Bagwell.
No. I don't know why everybody said Marcus is a name out there like that, man.
Oh, man. I was like, I've talked to other people over the years. It's like, who was like your least favorite interview? It's always Buff Bagwell. It's like, does anybody like this guy?
Wow. You know, wow. I think that he got a bad rap because not so much of him, but because of his mama. His mama always trying to do his business for him.
Oh, yeah.
Mama, his mom trying to be involved in everything, trying to be his tag team partner. I can't believe him and his mama was tag team partners at one time. You know what I mean? Really? Bagwell, really?
Judy Bagwell.
You know, shit.
That's a hard stigma to get rid of. You're a mama's boy on television like that, you know?
You know, and then, you know, I've been a lot of times, you know, when shit would go down or shit did get serious and he's about to get his ass whooped or about to get fired, you know, his mom would call the office and take care of it for him, you know. So I think, you know, that has a lot to do with, you know, any time that you want a boy and shit and you got your mama trying to take care of your shit for you, something wrong. You know, so and that just puts bad taste and a bad name on everybody's mouth. You know what I mean? Regardless, you know, he never was a great wrestler. You know what I mean? When we got together, I don't even think he was. I thought he was a pretty shitty wrestler when we got together. But you know, we involved and we became a hell of a tag team. You know what I mean? But you know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of the spots and a lot of shit that we would do is because I came up with it. You know,
so you carried him,
you know, whether he won't admit it or not. Hell yeah, I carried him, and that's why my back hurt now. He carried his ass too long. Sure, no,
Buff is not the stuff. I want to ask you about the WWE Network. I don't suppose you're a subscriber to the network.
Not at all. I do got a few friends that have subscribed to it. And they've always calling me and bugging me about, hey, man, we see one of your old matches on there, you versus so-and-so, or one of your ECW matches, or, you know, not as many Flash Funk matches, but they get a lot more of the Too Cold Scorpio matches, usually, and stuff from all over. You know, unfortunately, WCW, ECW, and around, you know, which kind of pisses me off that they can still play all my shit for years and years and years, and I'm yet to see a dime for it.
Yeah, I mean, they basically own your, other than what, the Japan and the indie stuff, they pretty much own your career.
Exactly.
That's, no. Yeah.
And the only thing good about it, you know, bad for a lot of shit, but the only thing good about it is they show so much of my shit that it keeps me alive out there for people who's never seen me wrestle by that just happen to see my name pop up on one of the indie shows and realize, damn, he really can work.
That does have an advantage is people say, whoa. Who's this guy? This guy's pretty good. I got to check this guy out, you know?
Right.
I never was exposed to him. You're only exposed to the current stuff, and suddenly these old guys are pretty good.
You know, and the thing about it is you're not going to get, you know, a handful of people that's around my age still that was in that ECW era that's still going to go out there and give you 110% if you call them out on the show. A lot of times, a lot of these top guys that you call, main guys, you know, WWE, WWF, whatever, you call them out and shit, man, you're going to get a whole lot of jaw jacking and not really a whole lot of wrestling.
Yeah, I'm just doing as we're talking here, I'm just doing a search on Too Cold Scorpio on the WWE Network, and it's mostly ECW stuff.
Okay.
ECW, this is Living Dangerously 98. This is ECW Hardcore Television, which they have a lot of the old TV shows that they show, Hardcore Television. They do have like a couple quick hits of you. Here's Raw Attitude, you against looks like maybe Terry Funk.
Okay.
In the ring. Starrcade, here's actually Starrcade 93 from WCW. Tall Brawl.
Chris Benoit.
Yeah, so we got Starrcade 92, you're on here.
Hey, with Barry Windham.
Doesn't give me a description, but yeah, I mean, they got Hardcore, Quick Hits, Too Cold Scorpio's Quick Hits, which kind of like a best of, it looks like here. So, I mean, you're on there, definitely. And, of course, it's, if I do a search for Flash Funk, it will give all your WWF stuff as well. So,
okay.
Pretty neat. At least, you know, fans can definitely check you out that way. People that are, you know, new to you, unfamiliar with you.
Right.
Yeah, you are crossing into a new generation of fans. But, unfortunately, I guess for you, is they own your career. And
right.
It'd be great to say one day they call you up and say, hey, let's do a Too Cold Scorpio video, you know, a DVD release.
Right.
And they own your stuff. I mean, they could put out they could bring you in and you could relive all your great matches and memories. And maybe someday they do that, you know, hey.
And they would get paid and I would get screwed like always. Okay. That motherfucker.
Tell us what you really think. Now, come on, no sugar.
I ain't going to pull no punches. I ain't got time for that shit. I'm too old to play goddamn games and shit, damn it.
Let me ask you. I got a couple more, and then I'll wrap with you here. Obviously, we talked about the Hall of Fame, and you've had a great career. We talked about ECW, WCW, WWF, NOAH, worked indie scene. Certainly, you have the resume to be a Hall of Famer. Do you think, you know, in the short period of time here, you'll be getting that phone call from Vince and say, look, Scorpio, it's time for you to be inducted in the WWF Hall of Fame. You think that day is coming?
Man, I really truly believe that day is coming, and I'm just wondering why it's taking so long to get here. I guess you got to be a certain age before you can get in there, but I know that ain't the case.
Well, I tell you what, we just did a show right after this year's Hall of Fame ceremony, and I said, you know, already, you know, Rick Rude's not in the Hall of Fame. You know, why isn't Rick Rude in the Hall of Fame?
He should have been in the Hall of Fame years.
Yeah. And my longtime tag team partner, Frank D, the first name he came up with was Too Cold Scorpio. Why isn't he not in the Hall of Fame already? 30 years in this business, worked for all the big feds, held a lot of the great championships, had a lot of great matches. You know, why is he not already in the Hall of Fame? And I say, yeah. You know, I mean, you're a no-brainer. You should be there already.
You know,
I don't know what's taking. I mean, they point to Coco Beware, and he's always the butt of the jokes.
Yeah.
If Coco Beware is in, how come this guy's not in? If Coco Beware, I mean, Coco Beware is in the Hall of Fame before Rick Rude.
Mm-hmm. And for me, when Robinson passed away and shit, man, in his home up there in Rome, Georgia and shit, man, he should have been inducted the following year, in my opinion, because he had done a lot already and shit in the business.
I don't know. I mean, they put in Mr. Perfect. They put in Randy Savage. Part of it was...
I don't get it. It's how you going to put in people like, you know, Tyson and, you know, TV people and actors,
yeah,
and football players and not put in some of the great, you know, Mr. T, right. And then you're not putting some of the great wrestlers of all time in there? Really?
I got no issues with the celebrity wing as whole, but you guys deserve it before these guys get in, for sure. I mean, I love Mr. T.
Yeah, don't
be a fool. But for WWE Hall of Fame, where is Too Cold Scorpio? Come on.
Hello.
Like,
somebody not.
Where is Rick Rude?
Right.
How can Rick Rude not be in any Hall of Fame? I mean, come on.
Right.
It's just ridiculous. But I could go on and on about the Hall of Fame. And then at the end of the day, it's like I always tell my partner on here, why do we care about the WWE Hall of Fame? At the end of the day, it's Vince's Hall of Fame.
If Vince
wants you in, you're in.
If Vince
he doesn't, you're
wants
out.
You in. Bottom line, you just say, if Vince wants you in, you in. If you ain't, you ain't. Period.
If he had a committee with people that's been in the business for, you know, like Dusty Rhodes and some of these, Terry Funk, if he had a Legends panel, I mean, you'd be in a heartbeat. It wouldn't even be a second thought. But it's up to Vince. Vince's call.
Right.
So
how much?
I mean, Davey,
how much heat did you have with Vince before you left? And did Vince have a chance to fuck you before you left? If I want to put you in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, today is the anniversary of Davey Boy Smith's passing. 13 years ago today.
Wow.
We lost Davey Boy Smith, and he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Wow, another great legend.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Owen Hart's not in the Hall of Fame. We probably know the reasons why, but I mean, there's a lot of guys out there it's sad. Yeah. Talk about the book. When can we expect this book?
You know, I'm hoping by, you know, sometime next year, by mid next year. It should be out, hopefully. And in the meantime, hopefully I can find me a place and be able to get established and hopefully perhaps get me a school up and running. If not, I'll probably be running some classes or something where I might be teaching on the side out of somebody's gym.
Well, I tell you what, when you get that book out, definitely come back to us, and we'd like to talk again about your career in a little more depth as well. That would be awesome.
No doubt, man.
And as we wrap with you, just so that people are clear, are you on social media?
Right now, I am not on social media. I did have a little Twitter thing, but I never did follow up on it. I am on Facebook still. People can still contact me through Facebook, Original Too Cold Scorpio. And if there is a message or something, to all the great fans out there who have followed me, if you have left me a message and I haven't replied, thank you very much. Once again, like I say, be looking for the book to be coming out by sometime next year.
Well, I'm going to be looking forward. I'm definitely going to read that book because just the road stories I'm sure you have and and all the famous ribs. And wrapping with you, we, of course, this weekend, definitely check out Too Cold Scorpio. He's going to be there with Nunzio. He's going to be there as well. We're going to have BJ Whitmer. As I said before, it's the JT Lightning Invitational Tournament this weekend for Absolute Insane Wrestling, Friday and Saturday, May 22nd and 23rd. So definitely check out that show. And beyond that, Too Cold, anything else coming up that you'd like to plug? Any dates in the near future that you'll be appearing at?
Yeah, I'm going to be out and about in the NDCs a little bit more. I'm going to be October the 10th. I'll be up around Ohio again doing another show. I will be also down in North Carolina working against C.W. Anderson. We got a few quarrels we need to solve. And like I tell the people again, if y'all want to see some great wrestling, if you want to be entertained over the weekend, then I'm trying to tell you right now, y'all need to be at the AIW. I'm trying to tell you, it's going to be insane. It's going to be hot. And Too Cold's going to have his boots laced up tight, pulling some tricks out, and it's going to be on like neck bones.
Well, very good. I appreciate this interview. This has been great. We really enjoyed talking to you. Been a big fan of yours, so it's been great to finally speak to you.
No doubt, man. It's always a pleasure. I like to give a shout out to all the great fans out there. You're listening to Too Cold Scorpio in his house, and you got me right here, baby, on the GRP. That's right. Check it out on the GRP, Too Cold Scorpio. Shouting out to all the great fans out there. I'll see y'all in less than a week.